Well, it wasn't too bad, was it? Arsenal beat Luton Town 2-0 at the Emirates Stadium on Wednesday night. Jimbo, I think we both feared a lot worse than that.
Yeah, I'm glad that my prediction wasn't proved right. Still lost, but you know.
Indeed. We'll cover the game and a few bits that surround it after this intro. Hello everyone, welcome along to another episode of the Luton Town Supporters Trust podcast, coming at you thick and fast this week. As I said before the intro, we are reviewing Arsenal 2, Luton Town 0, and alongside me to do that I've got the Lutonian journalist James Cunliffe. James, before we get into the game itself, given that we're in a run of no wins in 10, let's think back to something much more positive, because unless you're very much West in this world, you won't be watching this until Friday, in which case it's the 15th anniversary of the Johnston Paint Trophy success. Just a magical, magical day, that one. And every time it flashes up on Facebook and everything, it just sends a nice smile and warm feeling through your body.
It does. I didn't know it was that long ago, though. That's giving me the ick a bit. I'm like, bloody hell, I'm knocking on. It was a great day. One of my favourites, really, just for what it meant. That season was so relentlessly terrible because of what had been put on us at the beginning. It was pretty terrible a few days later as well. But for that one brief day, it was magic.
Yep, I won't be giving you a 15-year anniversary of the six days time, because no one wants memories of that. But yeah, Johnston Paint Trophy final, absolutely brilliant. And every time April the 5th comes round, it should be celebrated. It's a momentous day in our history. And of course, the day that Mick Harford led us to the trophy, and Kevin Nichols, Keith Keane, Chris Martin, Tom Craddock, and everything that went with it. Claude Nakpa's winning goal. Brilliant game of football. And the catalyst, really, to the overall turnaround from all of this. From Wembley 15 years ago to the Emirates Stadium last night, James, absolutely nothing like a similarity. Really wasn't overly keen on the Emirates, I've got to be honest. I don't know whether it's because it was in close proximity time frame wise to Tottenham, which was a special ground, and I apologise if I've pissed off a load of Arsenal fans here, but you know, can't claim anything that's not there. It just didn't get me going at all, really. The atmosphere was dead. Some pillock in our end had a drum. It was just as loud as any drum I've heard in a football ground this season.
They were loud
then? Absolutely.
That's not allowed, is it?
Not in the Luton end, in the Arsenal end.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah,
we were both in the same sort of bit behind the goal. Had a drum. I don't know how big it was, but it would not make a thud. Two people behind the goal had these ginormous flags every time someone got near it, and it was like, what is this sanitised nonsense? some weird concoction of a song before the game as well, which is definitely not anywhere near close to matching You'll Never Walk Alone or anything like that at Anfield. But it is better than that pillock who had a trumpet at Spurs before the game on Saturday. That is the one thing that you have got better than Spurs Arsenal fans, but yeah, it just, the whole night really kind of felt a bit flat. They were there to win. We were there not to get battered. And 2-0 scoreline, and everyone strolled off with smiles on their faces, almost happy that that was the result.
Job done all round, really, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I was fearing the worst. That I gave a 4-1 prediction, and that was on the low end, I thought. I mean, they're the leading scorers. They don't give much away at the other end, as we saw. well, not only from that game, but they kept Haaland and Co. out as well. And, the amount of injuries that just kept getting worse for once, really. If you're looking for silver linings, it's the first game I can remember in a very long time where nobody got extra injured. So, or, you know, we hope so. So, you know, on those sorts of things, it's plus points, isn't it, really? And, you know, the season, as everybody says, is not going to hinge on that game, but it soon will.
Yeah, them games are to come. Yeah, we hope that we're all good with the injuries. I mean, obviously, Daiki Hashioka's one will have been an impact injury from a pretty fierce tackle from Saliba, has to be said. Not that it was worthy of a free kick against a Big Six club, of course, but so we kind of hope that he's okay. He did finish the game, so you'd like to think he's okay. And Rob's kind of hinted that we've got a player returning that can only be Rhys Burke for the Bournemouth game. So even if Hashi isn't okay, it looks like we've got that position sorted out. Team news was very interesting, wasn't it? Their team, first and foremost, they made five changes. Saka was nowhere to be seen. Obviously, the pitch didn't need rolling last night, so he was absolutely nowhere to be seen. No Martinelli from the start, no Jesus from the start, no Declan Rice from the start. And I can't even remember who else they dropped, but there was Kai Havertz, so I was happy with that. I did mention in the preview I wanted him to play, and he did. Luton's team news was actually a lot more positive than I thought coming out of that press conference on Monday.
Yeah,
I did not expect to see the name Alfie Doughty anywhere on it at all. Nowhere near fit, not even 50%, I don't think, but fair play to you, Alf. You soldiered on for 90 minutes and you put your body on the line for the cause. Fair play to Heath Chong. Didn't expect to see his name anywhere to be seen either. Credit to him as well, coming on for a really, really good 35 minutes. But the headline, we've had to take someone out of school, Jimbo. That's how desperate we're getting. We have to get permission from the headmaster to take someone out of school. Christian Chigozi on the bench, centre-back. And when Hashi and Ted and Mengi were down in the same incident, yeah, you were looking over to that bench and thinking, all right, mate, get ready. You're coming on.
Yeah, no, it's good to see, isn't it? They get a chance, even if it's just to experience the thing. And I was working out, well, not working out, I saw a tweet from his headmaster or headmistress about him coming on or being on the bench. And he actually goes to my old school, although they knocked down my old school and stopped calling it what it was called, and now it's called something else. So I don't know if I can quite claim it, but it's on the same patch of land. So he's one of my own, at least. But yeah, I think it's a bit of a stretch to expect that a 16-year-old's going to come on at centre-back after just being named on the bench for the first time. But, you know, it's one of these things, isn't it? Because the situation is that bad, but if they can give little bits of experience to young lads, and obviously Zach Nelson had a debut, then it sort of bodes well. I've answered a couple of tweets online from people saying, on YouTube, from people saying that, well, just chuck the kids on and let's save everybody else. One bloke said, if you know, it was good enough for Man United, it's good enough for Luton. I'm like, well, there's one difference there. Well, there's a couple of differences, really, that Manchester United are the biggest club in the country with one of the best academies at the time. He's talking, of course, about the class of 92. And that was a once-in-a-lifetime generation of world-class footballers that came through and did it there. And no disrespect to Luton, but they haven't got a Category 2 academy yet. So it's a bit of a stretch to think that any one of those kids can come on and really make the impact of Beckham or a Scholes or a Nicky Butt or any of those lot. So, but you know, good nonetheless that they're on the bench, and hopefully they have long careers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sign that the academy is catching up. I mean, really, it's been playing catch up since we got out of League One. If we just keep on progressing too quickly. I mean, it wasn't actually at the level when we were in League One. Such was the sort of shortage of funding that it got whilst we were in the conference. But the fact that Rob's confident enough in four of them to at least be available on the or around it on the bench. Yeah, you're right. He probably was never going to come on last night. There wasn't a situation where that was going to happen. But ultimately, he's woke up this morning. He's been around the first team squad. He's been in the inner sanctums of the Emirates Stadium. And he's sat and watched, you know, world-class footballers do world-class things literally yards away from him. So fair play to him. What an experience that will have been for him. And hopefully that pushes him on to continue to improve in his career. And who knows, we might see him in the first team when the academy has fully caught up.
But they're all training with them as well, isn't it? Because he needed permission from the school to skip it and do some training. But that's the probably the best thing. I mean, it's nice to sit on the bench and be at the Emirates at a massive stadium. But the best bit would be the day-to-day, mixing it with the likes of Ross Barkley and co, isn't it? That's where you're going to learn your stuff and your trade. So, yeah, in that sense, it's good for the, bodes well for the future.
Really does, yeah. And who knows, we might still be in a position whereby we're safe enough for one or two of them to get a run out against Fulham later on in the season. The other piece of team news, first Premier League start for Fred Onyedimma as well. Obviously, he came off the bench against Tottenham on Saturday, came off the bench to play left wing back on Saturday, started at right wing back on Wednesday night. Kabore moved to left, try and keep up with all this. Kabore moved to left centre half, Hashioka was right centre half, Mengi, who was an absolute colossus once again in the middle of them all. Jordan Clark was back in the side as well. And changes all over the place. It's kind of like a Premier League reserve game in a lot of ways. And that's pretty much how it played out, really. I wouldn't say there was no intensity in the game, but there was nowhere near as much intensity as there usually is in a Luton game, both from Luton and indeed from the opposition. We kind of sat back, took our medicine, didn't want too much to happen. Couldn't really get, I mean, that defence, Jesus, them two at the centre of their defence, my word, they've got the lot. Pace, power, defensive skills. I can see why they got the best. How we scored three against them in the home game is still baffling to me, to be quite honest. Nothing really happened. And then just out of the blue, really, Alfie puts the ball into Pelly, who's not on the half turn. They've pounced, haven't they? We said it in the Tottenham review, Tottenham set the trap. And that leaded to the Son double post hit. The same trap was set. Pelly's turned right into Smith Rowe, who's had it off of him. Odegaard into Havertz, back to Odegaard. Sliced across his shot expertly and gave Kaminski no chance, really. And from being really comfortable for 25 minutes, within the sort of click of your fingers, one mistake, 1-0 down, and that's the level we're operating at.
Been there loads of times before, haven't we, really? It was a case of not conceding very early and taking it as far as you could, but all the while expecting that they're going to create chances, and when they do, they can be clinical. To be fair, it was a bloody good strike from where he was. You don't beat Kaminski like that if you're not having a right good go. But yeah, it was, to Luton's credit, they responded really well after that, and that's the main thing, because with any of these things, you're just sort of worrying about whether the floodgates are going to open, which was the fear all along before from everybody, really, about what the score could be. And that's sort of the thinking by don't concede early as well, and maybe it gets them a little bit nervous. It's hard to tell for their crowd, isn't it, whether they were nervous or anything, but... you did sort of sense a bit of relief from their side when it went in, that they could just relax, and that's a dangerous thing. But as it happened, not too bad in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, they were heavily in the let's save ourselves for the bigger fish to fry mode, weren't they? I mean, obviously, the announcer announced at the end their next two home games are some club called Bayern Munich and Aston Villa. I mean, you know, go from Luton to Bayern Munich. I've never seen such a downgrade from Luton to Bayern Munich before. And of course, Harry Kane and everyone that's going to go with that Champions League quarterfinal. You're right, we did respond well without really getting in at them. Townsend put a couple of crosses over. Clark maybe should have done better with a header at the back stick for one of them. Couldn't quite get it on target. But hey, this is Jordan Clark climbing against, I think it was Saliba, but it might have been Ben White. But either way, he's not going to get much joy out of either of those two, is he?
He's about double the size of him, really.
Absolutely. So he did well to get his head on it, let alone direct it anywhere. And again, the game just looked like it was petering out. And then out of nowhere, they've just flicked through the gears and sliced us wide open, really. Barkley hasn't tracked Emil Smith-Rowe, and he absolutely knew about it once the ball ends up in the back of our net as well. Ted and Mengi didn't half get into him. Smith-Rowe has all of the penalty box to himself. You give someone of that quality that much time, he's going to pick someone out. I mean, the bloke he picked out ball went through his legs. So that was happy days. Unfortunately, Hashi's covered him so well that he can't see the ball come in and it's just hit him. And how's your luck, Hashi? It's not great at the minute. I mean, he'd just been wiped out 5 minutes beforehand, probably couldn't even feel his legs, let alone move the things. And ball hits it and just trickles over the line. And as I say, Mengi had a right old pop at Ross Barkley. He got stuck into him. And I kind of like it, really, because, you know, it just tells me that they all see Ross as one of the boys, because we all know that he's different class. Mm-hmm. But if they all see him as one of the boys, then that's why it's all working so well. So I've absolutely no problem with Taylor Mengi. Ross Barkley gave a bit back, and not to the point where there was, you know, shoving and fisticuffs or anything like that that you sometimes see. But I'm fine with individuals getting called out for not doing their job in a game of that situation where just track your runner.
Yeah, it also shows that Mengi's stepping up to be a leader, isn't he? Which, considering when he was signed and he didn't play for the first few games, and we're thinking he's going to be sort of an understudy, he's like the main man now, isn't he? And he's both forced to be, but also deserves to be as well, because he's been really fantastic. And he was, again, on Wednesday night, he was, yeah, it's a shame, because, and that may feed into why he had that reaction against Barkley, because it's so frustrating, isn't it? But again, even when they've made the space, they found the space, they've lost Ross Barkley as a marker, and they get to the byline, the person they don't cross it to doesn't get it, and it still goes in, and it's so frustrating. I mean, it wasn't the, you know, I still unfathomable shank from Kabore at Tottenham Stadium, but
yeah, it just hit Hashi and went in, didn't it?
It's just again, we spoke about it in the last podcast. It's the timing of these goals which are so frustrating, because it just doesn't seem like a fluke that these teams are getting these goals at, you know, just before or just after half time, because they know how important those moments are. At 1-0, you go in and you might have thought, well, there's still a chance to nick something. No chance that they were scoring two, really, after that. So it's almost damage limitation, which you could say probably was the whole of the game. But when you've got a little bit of a sniff at a 1-0, something like that, then, you know, anything could happen, as we've seen many times in football before. But yeah, it was very frustrating. Very, very frustrating.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there's no getting away from that. It most definitely was frustrating. I actually thought Barkley was having a really good game as well. He pinged a few diags to Alfie and Clark that were absolutely superb, and he carried us up the pitch after they scored that opening goal as well. And yeah, nothing came of it, but that's only because of the quality of their defence. I mean, you're right, when the second one goes in, we could still be playing there next Wednesday with the quality of their defence, and we weren't getting two goals, were we? But the big fear at halftime, you've literally just conceded a second goal. You can see heads have dropped. The incident with Mengi calling out Barkley and everything else. You look at our bench, there's only really Chong, Berry, Woodrow to come off of it. You look at their bench, it's got to be best part of $500 million on theirs. And you're like, if they bring these on and we tire like we did, say, at Bournemouth in a midweek game, this is going to be, and they want the goal difference, this is going to be absolute carnage. Thankfully, they clearly didn't want the goal difference, even though they brought some of those on. I'm sure if they wanted the goal difference, Gabriel Jesus, for example, would have come onto the pitch. Martinelli would have probably played on the left rather than going over, playing on the right and things like that. So, but we didn't. And every time, actually, that you think, oh, this could get messy, these boys are like, no, we're not going to let it get messy. We're going to bounce back, and we're going to make sure that whatever happens, we come out of here with some credit. And Rob always speaks about scoring the last goal, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. We didn't score the last goal here. That wasn't happening. But we were definitely no worse than them in the second half. I think we had 47% of possession in the second half alone, and we had more shots on goal than them in the second half. Again, nothing really threatening David Raya, but Kaminski's only made one save in the second half as well, and that was from a long-range effort from Eddie Nketiah. But I really liked us in that second half. I liked the fact that we just got on the ball, we travelled with it, we carried it, we tried to get our players in good positions. We did get our players in good positions. Kabore was down at the byline a few times. Chong slid Alfie Doughty in behind Ben White a few times. I mean, to be fair to the two fullbacks, when they're looking up who to cross it to, I doubt they could even see Morris, so they've got their two towers either side of him, let alone pick him out. But I really liked how we carried the game to them. Bearing in mind at this point, they're bringing Declan Rice off the bench. They're bringing Martinelli off the bench. Nketiah is coming off the bench. Jorginho's come off the bench. You know, these are Champions League winners, Premier League winners and the like. But we were still brave enough to go at them. Again, you know, you can't say that we were threatening or anything, but we didn't go under and we leave there with something to take from the game, even if it's not the result that we wanted from the game.
And that's the thing. That is the thing, because if you get absolutely hammered, then who knows what that means for the next game. But if you can go there and play that well, admittedly without threatening, hold your head up high, and Rob used the phrase, isn't he, of not going under, which is exactly what it was. I did think that they played some good football in that. In the middle of the park, at least, they used the space of the Emirates pitch quite well, and they looked quite confident. There was no worry for me that they looked shot in that sense, that they, you know, if they were against a team that weren't as good as Arsenal, that they could have had a go and picked them off. Because I mean, they tried, but that's the quality of Arsenal at the moment. But that's the thing that's going to stand them in good stead in these games. Because they had to keep in it, and if they know that they can keep in it against Arsenal, albeit they didn't have all of their top stars out, they're still bloody good though, then there's no fear at all with your Bournemouths and your Everton's and all that stuff. So that was the key thing, I think, that that second half performance was as good as it was. And actually, when you saw Rob afterwards, he seemed a bit more buoyant than he did some other defeats. It might be that, you know, the Tottenham was last minute. That's a killer, isn't it? It hurts. But you sort of know you're beaten for a while, but it's like playing for pride, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and there was an element of hanging on at in the second half at Tottenham, wasn't there? We couldn't deal with Brennan Johnson. We couldn't get out or anything like that. We didn't allow ourselves to get into that situation this time around. We controlled the game as well as we did. We're still playing so many players out of position. I mean, at some point in that half, Fred had to go off because he's just not played enough football. You keep him on, you break him, he's out for Saturday and don't need that. I mean, we'll look ahead to the Bournemouth game in particular, but Fred against Semenyo could be the you know, the overriding outcome of that game. So it was good to have him off. When he went off, Kabore came from left centre half back to his usual right wing back. Alfie Doughty went into left centre half. Heath Chong went into the left wing back like we saw him do against Nottingham Forest. So we've got so many players playing out of position. But yeah, I just really enjoyed watching the way that we went through the lines with the ball. You know, Doughty into Clark. Clark would carry it. Barkley would carry it. Find Chong. Doughty would, even from the left centre-back position, he'd still get forward, or they would find Kabore. There was one in the second half, wasn't there, where Morris had the ball and he really should have found Kabore, and he had oceans of space in behind. I think it was still Zinchenko at that point. And you thought, hang about, if he finds him here, we could have some joy. But he just couldn't, bad could pass, he? I think Gabriel either read it or it was a bad pass. But the fact that we were able to get into those positions, like you say, take the Man City game out of it and concentrate on the other six to come. If we can get into them positions against Arsenal, there's no Gabriel or William Saliba in any of these teams that we're coming up against. So if we can get into them positions, you've got to think we would be more threatening with the end product. There's every reason to believe we can still pick up these points that we need to pick up in order to stay in the Premier League this season, regardless of what happens to Everton.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, because, you know, it could turn into lip service when you say that these are the games that are not going to define our season. But unless you can prove in those games you've got something about you, when you go into the games where you've got more of a chance of winning, then I think you're dead in the water, really. So, that didn't happen. And these boys, you know, the 13 that are available, whatever it is, are showing, you know, all the fight necessary. You know what, how that transpires in those games, particularly, you know, from Saturday, from the Bournemouth one, and what happens, it's a different kettle of fish. But I think the positivity of it in defeat, admittedly, and you know, you could look at the statistics of it, you know, it's 10 games without a win, but it was only the first game in 20 they've not scored. So that's, you know, the previous 19, that's pretty impressive. And you've got to look at, you know, performances of some of the players that were really positive. I really liked Chong on Wednesday. So positive. And, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that it hadn't been a particularly vintage couple of months, for obvious reasons, I think a lot more should be made of Chong's performances. He's been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not because of him that the results haven't been what they should be. I mean, he scored in three games. You know, we should have got a result in the Villa game, should have won the Bournemouth game. And obviously he put us ahead against Tottenham, and but for, you know, late errors, we'd have got a result in that one. So these Chong goals are very important, but he's just looking so much better on the ball, isn't he, Chong? He's looking more physical. He's looking more direct. And I don't mean that in a derogatory term. He's athletic. And when you think of how many minutes everyone's had to play at the minute, for him to still show the athleticism that he is doing. I mean, he was chasing back big time on Saturday, particularly in that first half. It was mentioned in our YouTube comments that Porro only became a factor, and we mentioned it in the podcast, once Chong went off in that game. And he's obviously, in amongst this sort of two-month spell, he's taken an absolute battering at Bournemouth that's forced him off the pitch, and another battering at Tottenham that's forced him off. So he's adding robustness to him as well. We saw him, didn't we, coming out of the training ground a week or so ago, and he's still cut a positive figure despite everything that was going on. And we're seeing that on the pitch, and we knew how good he was. We saw it with our own eyes on that afternoon when Birmingham came to town in the Championship. But we're actually seeing an even better version of Chong now, I think, albeit he's up against Premier League teams rather than a Luton Town team that had literally just come into the Championship. But I really do think that technically, his sort of intelligence and everything, you can see why he come through Man United's academy now. And if we can stay in this league, he's the kind of player that will be a huge asset to us next season.
I totally agree. I think his all-round game has really improved. I mean, you know, he's known for running with the ball, and that's what we saw in that Birmingham game. It was just a whirlwind performance. You're not going to get that every game, particularly in the Premier League. But I think, you know, if you look from the start of the season, when he was sort of, he'd be given a chance and it didn't work out, he'd be back on the bench and he'd have to do that for a while before he was given a chance, same again. The frustration for me of that was, because we know there's a player in there, was that he was too easily sort of shaken off the ball. I don't see that now. It's like, I mean, it can happen to anyone. It happens to Ross Barkley sometimes, but it's harder to get the ball off him, which is good. And when he's got end product, as in the goals he scored, but also some of the goals he set up as well, he's a real asset to the team. And yeah, really, really growing into the team at a moment when, you know, everyone's trying their best, but there aren't that many, I sort of say this with lowercase letters, superstars, but he's sort of putting a case forward for it.
Yeah, if we can get bodies back to this situation where we can go back to that 3-4-2-1 and he can be one of those two, he is a massive player between now and the end of the season, because the teams that we're coming up against is exactly the sort of style that he likes. You're right, he was soft earlier in the season. I called him out for the way he went down trying to get a foul against Brentford on this podcast earlier at the time. But since then, yeah, he's really grown. And like a lot of people under Rob Edwards' coaching, actually, he's improving all the time. Another fellow who's improving, and we really, really should give an absolute huge shout out to this guy, because there's another one that I've called out for. I mean, it was so obvious after the Aston Villa game. Is Issa Kabore, because since he switched off at that back stick, his defending has been absolutely superb, whether it's been left centre back when he's been called upon on the couple of occasions been called upon there, but particularly right wing back. I mean, you think about wingers in this league. I mean, even on Saturday, for all Timo Werner can't finish his dinner, he's lightning quick, right? The game before that against Nottingham Forest, they have Alanga, Callum Hudson-Odoi. None of these were really factors. And yet, whilst doing his defensive work, he's still able to get forward. He set the Ross Barkley goal up at Bournemouth. He was involved in the sort of move that led to the Chong goal by getting the ball into Clark. He's still able to get forward. His end product when he gets forward is a lot better. There is still the odd cross that sails somewhere into a different time zone, but in the main, he's getting better there. And maybe that Aston Villa era was the coming of age moment of him, because in the whatever it's been, 6 or 7 games since then, I can't remember him putting a single foot wrong. He's been perfect going backwards and going forward.
I can remember
well, apart from the own goal, yeah, of course.
I still don't know how he shanked that in against Tottenham, but yeah, I take your point. His defensive work has been outstanding, and I almost got the sense that, you know, when he came back from AFCON, he wasn't really getting in the side and they didn't fancy him because they'd figure out a way to play without him being there. But yeah, since he's come back in, and of late as well, when they've all had to really step up, and he's, you know, he's not a Luton player. He probably won't be here next season, but he's putting a shift in, and yeah, to you know, the versatility that he's having to show as well, because he's not playing his wing back role that he came here for. That's the same as Hashioka. I mean, I've not seen him play his proper role yet. They're all having to fill in, and they're doing a good job of it. And apart from that shank against Tottenham, he has been outstanding, I think. And all credit to him.
I mean, if he can finish like that at the other end of the pitch, we'll be absolutely happy days. Of course, Issa can give everything he's got on Saturday because he can't play against Manchester City, and we might, you know, might be scrambling around for bodies at the back in that game. But again, we'll come to that down the line. Can't end this podcast without absolutely going large on Tedder Mengi. I know you mentioned it just then. It's so easy to forget that this guy's 21 years old because he plays like he's been in the Premier League all his life, like he's established in the league, like he's one of the best central defenders in the league. And I've got to be honest with you, I'm looking around. I mean, them two last night were obviously the benchmark. But he ain't a million miles away from him from what I saw last night. I mean, Havertz wasn't a factor at all. And for all I jest about how he might or might not be very good, the fact that the only time you saw him in the game was when he was swan diving and getting booked, quite rightly so, speaks volumes. I mean, this is a guy who scored a winning goal in a Champions League final. Not getting a look in. Same on Saturday, really. Son, by and large, apart from when we made our own individual errors, Son didn't really get much of a look in either. He had the shot that hit both posts and the goal, but the goal was obviously not Mengi's fault because it came from a corner where he was in an attacking situation. He's just so good. And if we stay in this league and we're able to keep him beyond, I think he's a future Luton captain. I really do.
Yeah, I think he's showing those qualities now. I mean, there've been very few strikers that have got the better of him. That's why when City came to town and Haaland was just monstrous, and you were like, I've never seen that against Mengi, because he doesn't let other strikers bully him off the ball. And when you saw that, it was quite shocking, really, because it wasn't like he wasn't trying. It's just that guy is unbelievable. But I mean, against pretty much everyone else, he's given as good as he's got. And, you know, he's
come out on top, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in many occasions. And he's thrown his body on the line. A couple of blocks in the last two games where you thought, wow. Even when they're getting heavily challenged in them. And yeah, it was a bit worrying when he went down. But you have to think he's probably made of quite strong stuff if he's gone on England under 21 duty, been sent back for an injury, but he still recovers to go back and play for England. And then carries on doing what he's doing for Luton. So, it's a wonderful acquisition. And I would probably say, you know, if we went back and looked at episodes of this from earlier in the season, he's far in advance of where I thought he'd be.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was a player at Exeter, but you can't really tell against Exeter. But yeah, he is. He's absolutely, well, certainly in the defensive areas at the minute, he's the first name on the team sheet, isn't he? I mean, you could argue Ross Barkley is actually the first name on the team sheet, but Mengi certainly isn't far behind. Yeah, Haaland didn't look like a League Two striker against Mengi that night, did he? Yeah, shamey. Hopefully he looks like a League Two striker next Saturday.
Hopefully he just doesn't play.
Well, that'll be handy. Didn't play against Aston Villa, so he doesn't necessarily need to play against us. So yeah, they're three really good performers. And just a word on Fred, actually. Another one who gave as good as he got. The game was too fast for him in the first 10 or 15 minutes. You know, I'm not criticising him. It's just how it is. He'll know that. But who wouldn't expect that to be the case? This was literally his first Premier League start. And apart from 20 minutes or so at Tottenham on Saturday, it was his first football since he came back from Rotherham, who are out of their depth in the Championship. That's the level that he's had to raise. But when he got into the game, I thought he was perfectly fine. He got forward as much as he could do. He tried to find space. There ain't none in that Arsenal back line, but he tried to find it. And again, if we're looking ahead at the games to come where we're playing against defences that aren't as good, Fred's pace, the fact that he's got legs and he can carry the ball into those dangerous areas and commit men that could then open up a little bit of space for the cleverer players, the Chongs, the Barclays, the Clarks, the Morrises of this world. He's another one who out of absolutely nowhere has got a big role to play in these last seven games.
Yeah, he could be the most unlikeliest hero. And I think anybody with any football intelligence, you don't even have to have any football intelligence, can realise the potential opportunity ahead of him there, that He should not be playing Premier League. If, you know, he got injured at Rotherham and he came back, but even then, you know, a month or two ago, we were told he was still injured. Nobody had thought about Fred Onyedimir. That's no disrespect to him, but he just wasn't. He wasn't. And then he comes in and he gets a game against Tottenham and then starts against Arsenal. It's not a bad thing on your CV to have when you're expecting to play Championship football all season, to make your first Premier League start against the, well, what were for 24 hours the league leaders of the Premier League at the Emirates. So, yeah, he's got a huge opportunity there that sometimes, you know, everything's been going wrong for Luton and against Luton, but sometimes the footballing gods leave you a little bit to, you know, hang your hat on and hope for. And if he can do something, then who knows? He could be playing for his Luton Town future, and he could get something. If not, he'll be one of those players that are remembered for doing something particularly special in Luton's history.
That's for sure. And I've mentioned a few times on this podcast, I just love seeing good guys get their reward, and there is no better good guy than Fred. He's the nicest bloke you're ever going to meet. He's a cracking lad. And having been so heavily involved in getting us into this division, it is fitting. And I understand, you know, that we had to be ruthless with one or two players at the start of the season, but it is just lovely that he gets a Premier League go at it at this stage of his career, whether that's extended into next season or not. Obviously, he's out of contract in the summer, and he's already admitted he's not even thinking of that. It's just all about the team, and that's the kind of guy he is. So I'm delighted to see Fred doing well, and I'm sure he's going to get a fantastic reception when he's back at Kenilworth Road on Saturday. So we were never going to be defined by last night, but the one thing that I think Rob wanted more than anything was to take something from the game. I think most people knew we weren't going to take a result from the game, albeit, you know, he had that funny comment in his press conference, didn't he, before the game, that he looks at his plans and works them out and he convinces himself that we're going to win games. Yeah. But, you know, even that one took a little bit of convincing. But we got something out of the game. We didn't get the result we wanted. We haven't taken a battering on the goal difference. That is a good thing. Okay, results didn't go our way in midweek, but they could easily reverse again this weekend, and we could cancel that goal difference disadvantage out with Nottingham Forest and go level on points and even escape the bottom three. That was the real overriding thing last night. The fact that we took some positives out of the game as well. The fact that hopefully we've got no injuries, potentially one coming back at the weekend. It's from a night where we were fairly well beaten, if on anything but the scoreline. It's certainly nothing really to worry about.
No, it's the bigger picture stuff, really, isn't it? You've got to go and play these fixtures, and you know, the integrity of the game didn't suffer, whatever that is. I mean, it was the point last week when I was thinking, sod the integrity of the game, but you know, it didn't, and they've come out of it relatively after the last 2 months unscathed, and that's you know, under the circumstances is what you get out for.
Yep. I've never been in a Premier League dressing room, but if you can take confidence from a 2-0 defeat, I think that was the one that we were able to take confidence from, and the proof will be in the pudding on Saturday. That is it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks to everyone again who at the Emirates last night came up for a chat and let me know how much you enjoy the podcasts and are grateful for us for doing it. We're actually grateful for you for watching or listening, however it is that you consume this podcast. Thanks for doing exactly that for this episode. They are coming so thick and so fast. Poor old James, he's on the editing machine like a hamster in a wheel this week. It's non-stop, isn't
there's
it?
There's an image for you.
There's smoke coming out of the thing. It's that busy with podcasts this week, but it is the last midweek, Jimbo, so we're all,
thank God,
much calmer from here, that's for sure. Thanks for joining me, for taking time away from the editing suite to give your thoughts on that game. Thanks to the Hightown Club for hosting our studio, as always. We really do appreciate it. Thanks to Sean Grant and the Wolfgang for our brilliant intro, and to Ed Smith Creative for all of the designs that you see on set. Until next time, which will probably be out roughly 30 seconds after you've finished watching this one, which will be a preview of a huge Premier League game against Bournemouth. Come on, you Hatters.
I love this town. I love this town. You know what I love about this town is actually you. Everyone in it has got this massive soul.